You're listening to The Emo Brown, The Saddest Mexican Podcast. Ahí está el pedo. The place to be con el chicle. Chicle Enrique Lugo in the house.
What's up? What's up?
¿Cómo estás, mi rey?
Muy bien, aquí. Listo para platicar.
¿Un cotorreo?
Sí, unas preguntitas para el señor David.
Oh, shit. Ladies and gentlemen.
Are you ready?
I'm never ready, fool. That's what we're talking about. It's like, I feel like the more I plan for an episode, the least ready I feel.
Yeah. But this one's a good one, right? Because we've been talking a lot about things ramping up in our community. And then last week we had a real one that got...
We got feedback on that.
We did.
Good feedback. I don't think I got any negative feedback on the last
one. For the most part, good. Yeah. But I think I've been, just on a personal level, I've been putting out ideas of collaborating with police officers and getting a conversation going and... You know, because of the times that we're in and just history in our community is like, that's not a very popular stance to take. And not that I've gotten negative feedback, but I've gotten some pushback of like, yo, like, why? Like, you know, certain groups aren't going to be cool with that. And a conversation I was having with my wife earlier today of like, you know, we put ourselves out there and this is public and people know who we are and we do things in our communities and, you know, we're gonna hear it whether we like it or not. So
yeah, bro, believe me,
I'm excited though, because I think things have to change and we have to do things different too in order for it to happen, you know. So sometimes that means being a little uncomfortable and doing something that's not going to be popular, but seeing where it goes.
Ultimately, we were talking about, you know, talk about it, don't be about it.
Yeah,
no, perdón, al revés. Be about it, don't talk about it. It's like, right, we got to step it up. And even people in our circle, like, pushing is like, all right, man, walk it like you talk it, dude. This is, you guys are all about doing this, whoop de woo. Like, all right, well, here we are. This is the one we've been kind of prepping for. We have David Hoyos in the place. David Hoyos represents Chula Vista Police Department. Welcome. Thank you. What exactly is your title? I don't want to butcher it. I want you to give it to me.
Yeah.
Al Chile, perfect.
So let me just start out by thanking you guys for having me on. It's been a long time coming. You're going to talk about that. I'll give you my disclaimer as I start. Today, I am representing myself, David Hoyos. Okay. I like how you say my name.
David Hoyos.
Say it better, but I'm here representing myself. I am a current sergeant for the Chula Vista Police Department. I work in the Crimes of Violence Homicide Unit. I'm also the former president of the Chula Vista Police Officers Association. I stepped down in December so I could take a break so my family could see me from time to time. But today I am here to give you my personal viewpoints, my opinions, to answer the questions that your viewership wants to know. I don't have the answers to everything.
I mean, community.
I'm pretty opinionated, so I'm happy to share what I can and get the conversation going.
Well, let me circle it back. Yeah, thank you for coming in. It has been a long time brewing. I know I've been trying to get you in here to just kind of go over Chula Vista state of affairs as it relates to, you know, the police department, crime, certain statistics, where we are, where we want to be. And obviously, you know, you're a busy guy. I mean, shit, you're out there arresting people and things. And now seemed like it would never happen, but for some reason the stars aligned and boom, here you are. I mean, first off, thank you for coming here.
Yes.
Thank you. I mean, you think it was easy for us to put our neck out there to try to get you in here. As soon as we said it publicly, like, hey, we're going to speak to a representative of the Chula Vista Police Department to kind of get their insight, their perspective, their opinions. What are the rights? What are the wrongs? What needs to be done? What needs to be changed? And honestly, you being a minority within that establishment, we feel like you might be one of the better representatives to speak on the current state of affairs of not necessarily now Chula Vista, but I feel as a police entity as a whole in our country. Shit, there's riots everywhere right now, man. There's riots in Paris. There's riots in London. So, in essence, of the world, you know? What you got, Chicle?
Yeah, I think all of that, obviously, you have your own experience, and our makeup, our communities is very different from some of these cities that are experiencing more intense rioting and pushback. But I think we also have a history here in San Diego and in Chula Vista. And I think for me, just getting an insight of what I would consider a good cop, you know, and the things that you are witnessing and that maybe we don't always have insight to better understand what we can do as a community to work together, to have more accountability and maybe understand the process of, you know, what's going on right now, right? Abuse of power, excessive use of force. Like, how do these things get documented? What happens? Like, those are the questions that I think our community, you know, and I reside in city of San Diego, Paradise Hills, you know, but I know a lot of the people that gave me some heat was because of that, you know, like there's no accountability. Like, we don't know what happens. It seems like they just protect their own no matter what, you know, and that's troubling because if a police officer is supposed to protect me and I don't feel protected, you know, my own wife was telling me like, man, like there's a curfew. I go to work at 3 a.m. Am I going to get pulled over? What if a cop starts pressing me and asking me questions and like I get nervous, like what's going to happen to me? And like there's all this uncertainty in our folks. And, you know, even just fast forwarding, something that we've been talking a lot about is my school's going to have a graduation ceremony. Part of the guidelines that the San Diego County Department of Health has put out is that we have to have SDPD present. And students have been emailing me, hey, that's going to cause a lot of anxiety. Like, what can you do about that? And I see it both ways, right? I get it. I understand that some of us, myself included, react when you see a police officer. You know, it's like subconscious. See, I know I didn't do anything wrong, but I still get nervous.
But did I do something?
Right?
Shit, what am I doing?
And so I think those are things that I'm seeing both ways, right? Like from my own experience growing up the way that I did, saying some of the things that I said as a kid and just this us versus them mentality to where I am now and seeing things slightly different, but also seeing this as an opportunity for us to like really come to the table and let's talk, you know, what can we all do better? What can we do as a community to get more involved and push for certain things to change? I don't know if some of that work is already happening.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I'm coming from.
And that's a perfect preface. I mean, like you said, we got a lot of heat for this. We got a lot of praise for doing this. But ultimately, we want to learn about the man behind the badge. David Hoyos, who are you? Why are you here? What made you become a police officer?
Yeah.
That's kind of a funny story. I kind of came a cop by accident because out of high school, went to college for a little bit, was working at Target, pushing some red shopping carts, and had an opportunity to go work at Union Bank for a good friend of mine. Got me a job in there, good job. And I thought, oh, this is good. I get paid good, you know. My son's mom, that's where I met her. We are no longer together. She got pregnant and the bank said, can't work together. So we were kind of forced to look for another job. And we played on a softball team. And one of the ladies I worked with, her son worked for the county marshal's office at the time. And some nights he was working, but he would come by to watch us and I would ask him questions. And I just thought what he did was really interesting. And so I was kind of forced to look for a job. So I applied at the marshal's office and thankfully, you know, my parents were hard on me as a kid and kept me out of trouble. They forced me to, you know, I was always more afraid of my dad than I was, you know, the police. And, you know, I was able to get hired by the county marshal's office. And I was there for a little bit. There was a statewide proposition that merged all the county marshals with the sheriff's departments in the state of California. It was a money-saving bill. And I got merged with the sheriff's department. So I ended up becoming working for the sheriff's department. I was not sworn at the time. When you walk in the courthouse right now, you see somebody there with the metal detectors and, you know, step back and put your change in the, that was me. And I was bored. That was very boring. I did not want to do a career there, telling people to step back and take their belts off coming through the metal detector. So the sheriff's department, though, they sent us to the police academy because when you were non-sworn, they wanted you to become sworn so you could be a bailiff in the courtroom. And I thought that was a little more interesting, you know, would be in the courtroom and I can hear about stuff that was going on. But because we merged with the sheriff's department, they basically told us, hey, you know, the marshals used to automatically promote you when you went through the academy and graduated. But we don't do that with the sheriff's department. So the only reason we're going to send you is because the marshal already told you he would, but we're not promoting you when you were done. So there was a pretty good sized group of us that basically started applying to all these different departments. Because the sheriffs pretty much told us they weren't going to promote us. It's just not how they did business. So I really wanted to work National City PD. I had a lot of friends that worked there. I was in the academy with them. They just didn't have enough openings at the time. So I was on a waiting list, and I got lucky that Chula Vista was hiring at the time.
So you don't get an opportunity to exactly choose where you're going to go?
You know, my advice, you know, I was a recruiter. I worked in backgrounds for a while. My advice for someone who wants to be an officer is you got to put out, you know, multiple applications because sometimes people are hiring, sometimes they're not. Had I held out for National City, you know, in my heart, I think eventually I would have got hired by them. But who knows, you know, how long that would have taken. The opportunities that I've had at Chula Vista, I could have never gotten anywhere else. I love Chula Vista PD. I love our department. I try to get everyone who will listen to come to work for us because we have a lot of opportunities. We're a really good department. And, you know, it worked out for me.
Are you originally from the South Bay or?
So I grew up in Spring Valley. Mm-hmm. I'm a Spring Valley kid. I did live in Chula for a little bit. Matter of fact, when I worked for the marshal's office, and I'll tell you a funny story on why I moved. So I'm at court one day and working the little metal detectors, you know, a young guy, 21, 22 years old. And my neighbor is coming in for a court hearing. Okay. And they immediately recognized me.
Awkward.
A little bit. They immediately recognized me. And I said hi, smiled and waved. I didn't know them. The next day, they were there for a court hearing because the brother had gotten arrested. Mm-hmm. Went home. Next day, I woke up and somebody has spray painted the side of my car. Right out in front of my house. And I said, you know what? I don't think I can live here anymore because I don't want to be worried about somebody vandalizing my car. Never had an interaction with that family. Good, bad, waved, said hi like any normal neighbor. But because they saw me in uniform, it changed the way they felt about me. And so that's why I moved out of Chula Vista. And I haven't moved back.
Which that was going to be kind of a question for me. Like, do you think it's important to live in the community that you serve? Like, is there a benefit? Obviously, in that situation, that's a negative. You obviously don't want to have that situation go down, but do you feel like there's some sort of benefit living in the community in which you protect and serve?
So I think it definitely does have its benefits. I think the more you are in the community, the more you believe, the more you want to help it. I've been an officer here with Chula Vista PD for 20 years. I love and care about Chula Vista more than I'll ever care about Spring Valley, where I spent my life, right? This is, I spend my career is to make sure that this city, the city stays safe and that our citizens feel safe, which is why it's, you know, really troubling with what's going on right now.
And with what is going on right now, I saw that both you, the mayor, the chief of police, everybody came out and gave a statement or their stance, their opinion on what they felt with everything going on right now, specifically with George Floyd, Minnesota, the riots, the protests. What is your position? What is your stance? You as somebody, you know, a high-ranking member within the police department, minority. And I say high-ranking member because, honestly, I don't know the hierarchy, but sergeant sounds pretty legit, bro.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Sounds like a boss.
Sounds like a boss, if you ask me. Yes.
I'm legit, bro.
Pero, like, what is your stance? What is your opinion? And, like, how did it make you feel? Because I say, how did this make you feel? But let's be honest, man. This has been happening forever. Like, this is nothing new. This is just like, this is what happened this week. Because in reality, this happened 2 weeks ago, you know? So in that instance, there were two retired police officers or one retired police officer and his son, you know? So, I mean.
And that's just what was documented.
Correct.
You know, who knows how many folks get pulled over and get, I don't know. That's a question I want to hear your answer.
Yeah. Well, and to that same point. You know, last year at City Chula Vista, 95,000 police contacts we made. How many times did we make the news last year? Right. So to that point, when you say, God, how many are not documented? How many bad things did how many bad interactions the public have with the cops? You know, I would counter back with, yeah, one is too many, 100%. Right. But there's so many good contacts that happen. There's so much interaction that happens where everything goes off the way it should. Right. And so to answer your question, Steve, you know, I'm not a big Facebook poster. You know, we're friends, and I post a lot about golf and about drinking your beer, right? That's kind of, you know, Facebook is kind of my my get away from work, right? That's where I follow what my friends are doing.
Not these days, my man.
Yeah, you're right. And so, you know, I was getting a lot of questions, you know, from my own family and my friends, people who I've grown up with my entire life, people who I felt like know me, asking me like, hey, what do you think? And I was blown away by that. Like, what do you mean? What do I think? Like, I think it's terrible. It should never happen. It should have never happened. And then it dawned on me, like I had this light bulb went on, right? Like I'm the only cop they know, right?
Yes.
And the only other cops they hear about is when there's a bad news report on TV, right? I only know good cops. I've spent the last 20 years only working around good cops. I've met hundreds, thousands of officers in my career. I've never met a bad cop. I've never met anyone who came to work with ill intentions, who had a bad heart, right? And so that's why it blew me away. But then I realized people don't know the people that I know. They don't know the cops that I know. They only know me. So they're asking me because they genuinely don't know. They're like, anytime I hear about a cop, it's because they're doing something goofy. They're being accused of something bad, or they're doing something bad on TV, right? And so I said, you know what? I want to step out of my comfort zone a little bit and share on my personal page, right? Like my thoughts, because I want the people that I care about and who I think care about me to know that that's not okay. That what happened to George Floyd should have never happened. That's not anything that we're trained in law enforcement. When you watch that video, I would just tell you, when I watched that video from the beginning, you can actually hear the crowd asking George Floyd to comply. They're asking him, hey, cooperate, get up. To me, it seemed like the crowd was kind of pro-law enforcement at that time. Maybe they were, maybe they weren't. That's kind of what I get from the video. And then they don't get up. And the crowd kind of changes and says, hey, he can't breathe. Like, you guys need to get off of him. And when I watch that video and I look at that cop's face, it's almost like he wants to spite the crowd, right? Like, they're telling him to get up. So he's like, I ain't getting up. Mm-hmm. And at that point, he's not using force to effect arrest or to stop a fight. To me, based on my opinion of what I saw in that video, it looks like he's trying to punish George Floyd because the people are yelling at him or because of whatever he did before that video turned on. I don't know. But that's not okay. We don't punish people for their actions. We arrest people. We don't issue the punishment in law enforcement. That's what the courts do. That's what the judge and the district attorney's office do. Our job is to keep the street safe. We do that through public education. We do that through by making arrests, by putting people in jail. My entire career, Steve, I've been a put people in jail cop. And some that might not be popular. Some people listening right now might not like that, right? I'm not a ticket cop. If I pull you over, you're not going to get a ticket, right? If I pull you over, you did something really goofy driving. But to me, and some people do try to keep the community safe through traffic enforcement, right? We have motor officers. They go out every few years when the city puts out their community survey. Number one complaint is always traffic. Every year. So our motor guys go out and they work hard every day, right? To get people to slow down, just try and stop, you know, vehicle fatalities, right? For me, to keep community safe is you keep bad people off the streets. Black, brown, white, I don't care. Where I grew up with my family, I was taught not to look at color. I can tell you with 1,000% certainty, never in my career did I make a stop, did I make an arrest, did I write a report with any bias because of the color of someone's skin. It was because of the criminal actions that they took. And that's it. I mean, when you ask the question about George Floyd, that should never happen. Never. That officer was rightfully arrested. He's rightfully being prosecuted. That's how the system is supposed to work, right? But it shouldn't happen to begin with. And all the I know you're going to ask, so I'm going to just tell you now, all those officers that stood by, right, and watch. Not all of them are white. I saw the video, right? That should never happen. They are all, I will just tell you, I don't know what their policy is in Minneapolis. And here, San Diego County, at the police academies, here at Chula Vista PD, absolutely without a doubt, unequivocal. If you see someone who is using unreasonable force, you step in. You have an obligation. You have a duty to step in. And that's what happens.
Because from us, from the community perspective, you brought up like, okay, well, yeah, there was different minorities, nationalities on that, and in that team of four that played a role in George Floyd losing his life. From the community standpoint, it almost seems like it doesn't matter what nationality or what culture background you have. Almost like when you get that badge, you shed all of that, and now you're like in a brotherhood. It's become an alliance. It's like, it doesn't matter what's going on. I'm Mexican, I'm black, I'm this, I'm that. It's like when you become a police officer, it's like, okay, cool. From the community perspective, me included, it just seems like, all right, they're going to look out for their own, you know? And obviously that it may come across as an ignorant statement, but that is from community perspective, me perspective, just looking, it's like, okay, if something happens, like I've been pulled over. And I have that privilege growing up here in the South Bay where, in my experience, it's never been an issue. Like, I don't have to, like, worry too much, but I'm a deep thinker where I overanalyze things. Like, and when I've gotten pulled over, when something goes down and it's like I have to, like, have a conversation with the police officer, it's like, something could happen, and this shit can just disappear, like, and no one's going to believe me. You know, it's gonna. He's got his partner with them. They both have badges. They've got some sort of brotherhood that they've got to like protect. You know, protect the badge. Like, forget this guy. So, that's a perspective. That is a legitimate like viewpoint from us on you guys. Is there any truth to that? I mean, you are obviously gonna say no, but you've got. You know,
well, you don't know if he's gonna say no. Because I just want to jump in on that too. Is listening. You know, there's all kinds of information out there right now. And that is something that in listening to a podcast to better understand the law enforcement structure, it sounds like there is a credo of we protect our own, and almost like in parentheses, regardless of what they've done, you know, and I think part of why our communities feel that way, like I had never heard that till today, but I'd always believed it because when these things happen, you know, I appreciate you sharing your personal views on it. But I think as a community, we also want to see you, and when I say you, I mean like all police officers in uniform to speak up and speak out, because I think that's ultimately how do we build trust is by seeing, right? By seeing and believing that the people out there that like you said, you work with great people, and I believe that. But I think right now it's hard to trust that. You know, it's hard for me, even in San Diego, where we haven't had too many of these issues or challenges. Like, right now, it's hard to believe that a person in uniform is going to have my safety at the forefront, you know? And I think seeing what is happening with the local demonstrations and protests, you know, people getting shot in the face with rubber bullets, like... You know, like there's so many little things that, one, I'm not there and I don't know, right? So I'm not completely judging these instances that are being put out there on social media and on the news. But like there's so much that is unknown that I think an opportunity like what we have here today, where you're sitting with us just as a community member to share your experience, is so powerful because we haven't had too many of these opportunities. And I think just as we prefaced at the start, you know, and we had a coffee shop in Paradise Hills where right before we opened, a young lady, Alondra, one of our seniors every year at High Tech High, our students, senior year, they do a senior project. Her senior project was organizing and producing Coffee with a Cops event. You know, and she had a hard time doing it here in Chula Vista. So she made one happen in Paradise Hills with SDPD. And that was the first time I never even heard of Coffee with a Cop. You know, I was like, what? But it was really cool. And we had a ton of police officers from the area come in, you know, in their uniforms and treating us just like I imagine they act normally when they're not on shift. You know, and to me, I started to see something different. But in my own business partners and community members, that reaction of like, why? Why are you doing that? I thought you were about our community. You ain't about us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's this narrative that we have that I know it's not popular, but like we need to change that because yes. These are our own people out there. These are our own community members putting themselves out there on the line. And I think we got to give them a chance. But I feel like we also are responsible to encourage law enforcement to speak up and speak out with us, you know, like we haven't had this chance and we have that chance now.
And I feel like that, everything that we just threw at you can be like all wrapped up into like,
not sorry,
into one question. If good cops really exist, which they do, I'm looking at one, why aren't they arresting bad cops for their abuse of power? You know, like, ¿qué pasó ahí?
I think they are. I mean, you saw Minneapolis, that those officers, first one got arrested. The other one, I didn't catch it today. I saw breaking news on Twitter. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was the governor or somebody announced either the other officers were arrested or charged. I don't know. I didn't read the whole thing. I was in a hurry to come here and sit down with you, Steve. So I apologize for the listeners.
The other three were charged today.
By the time this airs, everyone will know what happened to those officers. But I would say we do. And you know, you start out with, you know, is there a code? Do you cover for each other? I tell you, I've never met a cop in my life who's willing to throw their career away because their partner did something stupid or because their partner did something illegal. We're friends, right? I mean, I've worked there for 20 years. Some of my best friends are my coworkers. I wouldn't throw my career away for any of them. I'm not going to put my family at risk. My ability to put food on the table for my family because my friend did something stupid. You know, I mean, there's a code. I mean, I don't see it. I could see why the perception is there. The question always is, you know, hey, you know, why aren't you out talking about it? I'm actually prohibited from speaking on personnel matters in public, in uniform, which is why I hesitated on my Facebook post. I said, you know what? Everybody's asking. I think it's important. This is a strange time, I think, going on in the world right now that I'm comfortable enough with putting myself out there and saying this isn't okay, right? Because it's not. But I've been a cop for 20 years. I've seen lots of guys do stupid stuff, and they all got in trouble for it. Every single one of them.
What does that mean when they got in trouble? Like, what happened?
So, you know, San Diego County, as you mentioned earlier, you know, we haven't always done things perfect, and we've had officers make the news, and we've had officers go to jail. I feel like here we do a good job. We hold our cops accountable. When I say somebody gets in trouble, you know, anytime somebody files a complaint, somebody says that we were doing something we shouldn't have been doing, whatever example you got, whatever everyone's thinking right now, that's your example, right? When somebody files a complaint, it goes to the person's first supervisor, right? They read the complaint, they investigate the complaint, right? Whether that's talking to witnesses, watching body-worn camera, interviewing the officers, trying to figure out if there's any validity to what happened. Maybe it's a perception thing. Maybe there was a miscommunication. There's a reason this citizen doesn't feel like they were treated appropriately. We want to find out why. Sergeant does their investigation and goes to lieutenant. Lieutenant reads the investigation, signs off on it, sends it back, asks more questions, whatever it may be. It goes to professional standards unit. Professional standards unit sergeant gets the investigation that the lieutenant's already read, that the sergeant already did, and they verify it. Goes to the professional standards lieutenant. They read it. It goes to the captain. They read it. And depending on the situation, if it's a big thing, right? If somebody's been accused of use of force, somebody's been accused of an ethical violation, something, you know, where we call it like a mistake of the heart, right? It goes to the chief to sign off, right? If it's which happens, they made an arrest and they left somebody's property at the scene. Was unintentional, totally our bad. The city's going to pay to replace that person's property. It's a mistake of the mind, not a mistake of the heart. There's a big difference there, right? We're human. We're going to make mistakes. Something like that, the chief probably wouldn't sign off on, but it goes all the way up to the captain. So you've got sergeant, lieutenant, professional standards sergeant, professional standards lieutenant, captain. Five people who are going to review that investigation to make sure everyone did what they were supposed to do, to make sure if that officer made a mistake, that they're held accountable, that that it's reasonable. There's a lot of checks and balances that happen that don't happen in any other career, right? I worked at Union Bank. I worked at Target. That stuff doesn't happen, right? You asked about, why aren't cops out there? Again, we can't really put ourselves out there, even on social media, and talk about work-related matters. You get in trouble, right? Everyone else has the First Amendment to say whatever they want. We really don't. I'll be honest with you. We're kind of, our hands are tied a little bit because we don't want to get in trouble with work or with HR for talking about personnel matters, right? There are a lot of checks and balances. And, at the end of the day, maybe the person is satisfied with the result of the complaint, with what is happening to that officer. Maybe they're not, but it is documented. It is kept in a file. It does not get purged. And if it happens again, it'll start again. Where there's smoke, there's fire. Mm-hmm. I believe I'm a supervisor at the police department. I believe that. It's no different than any other profession. If you see a continual problem, you got a pattern, it needs to be fixed, right?
Yeah. As a follow-up question, when that person, there's a file complaint, someone complained on me and now goes to that first supervisor for review, am I still working or am I on leave? What's going on with me?
So, depends on the complaint, right? So if somebody calls and says, hey, that officer was rude, right? If we pulled a cop off the street every time somebody filed a complaint about that, we had no cops out in the street, right? Something like that, sergeant's going to notify the person, hey, I'm going to let you know a complaint's been filed against you. I'm going to be reviewing your body-worn camera, right? Okay. And then it's going to be reviewed. And, a lot of it is perception, right? Maybe the officer spoke a little more aggressive because of the poor driving, or the officer, and none of that's okay. I mean, I don't want you guys to think I'm saying it's okay to, be rude. Absolutely not. We got to treat people with respect. You get more flies with honey than you do with vinegar, right? I'm a big believer in that. To me, communication, I don't have the answer to all of our problems, but I think it starts with communication.
Yeah.
And even when somebody is doing something wrong, and that's the reason that an officer is contacting them, you treat them with respect. You be open and honest with them. You tell them what they did. Chigley, I know I listened to the podcast last week, and you talked about when an officer stopped you and they told you their name and who they were. And
yeah,
that was weird for you, right? That's verbal judo. We actually go to a class on that and talk about that. It's something that we're taught. And it's
How often?
Yeah.
Because that's another thing too, sure, right? Like, you bring up a great point. Like, there are, and maybe this is unique to Chula Vista, I don't know about all departments, but I appreciate hearing that because I think those types of trainings make a huge difference, right? The vocabulary that we use, how we approach people. But like, how often does that happen? Is it you went to a class one time and now you're an expert, or is it continuous learning?
So, in California, all law enforcement falls under POST, which is a police officer standards and training. POST sets what training we have to accomplish yearly, bi-yearly, quarterly, you name it. That class that I took, it wasn't a requirement. It was just a course that the city actually had somebody come in. It's actually when we were at the old PD. It was a long time ago. We were in the old city council chambers, and we all came in, and this guy came in to talk to us about a different way to communicate with people. And I actually, that stuck with me. And when you said it, it made me smile because, the reason I think I latched onto that kind of technique, call it what you will, is you answer everybody's question before they have a chance to ask, right? You pull somebody over and you're like, hey, do you know why I pulled you over? Like, why will you stop somebody and ask them a question?
Exactly.
Right? It just makes more sense to stop somebody and go, hey, how you doing? My name is Sergeant Oils. The reason I stopped you, blew through that stop sign back there at 30 miles an hour. We got pedestrians walking in front of three punk ales all day long. That's a bad thing, right?
No. That's a good thing. Walking in front of my brewery is a good thing.
Not when people are driving 3 miles an hour through the stop sign, Steve, right? Can I see you? So you've already answered who you are. You already told them why you stopped them. They don't have any questions, right? They give you your information. And like I said, every officer is different. Everyone has you know, their theories on enforcement. For me, if I think the people are, okay, hey, my bad. You know what? I'm in a hurry. I'm sorry. It was unsafe. That person's not going to get a ticket, right? Right. Like I said, for me, race never in my career has played a part in any of this. And that's why it's so troubling with what's going on right now, because I know there are people in the community, black, brown, who have grown up feeling like, you know, they've been treated differently because of the color of their skin. I can't speak to that. That's not happened to me before. I understand why they feel that way. I would never argue with somebody to tell them you shouldn't feel that way, right? We shouldn't tell people how to feel. All I can do is make sure that when I'm contacting somebody, whatever race they are, that I treat them the same way I treat anybody else, with respect, be a professional, and hopefully that changes their mindset or their mentality, like it did with you, right? You had a stop where you were like, man, I felt like he asked me, and I want to talk to you about that one too. This guy asked me if I had any weapons in the car, and that's kind of offensive, right? I'm here with my family, and then another guy stopped me.
First thing he said.
Right? You know why officers do that? It's so we don't get accused of profiling. They ask every single person they stop the same question. So when they're asked, why did you ask Cheek like that? I ask every single person I stop.
Yeah, I'm sure they do, right? But
I've never been asked.
Going back to the previous point you were making, if that's what you lead with, I feel like it's setting people up.
Sure, and I won't argue with that.
That seems like an escalation.
I don't mind because, like I said in the previous episode, like people told me that's a standard question, you know, and I respect that. But I think I love hearing that there was this training. I'm disappointed to hear that it's not mandatory that it's optional for everyone. Yeah. Because I think those are the little things that could change a situation in such a big way, you know, because when that officer greeted me and introduced himself and showed me who he was, it changed me. Like, it threw me off. I was off balance. I didn't know what to do. Because here's like this guy who's being nice to me.
He became human
to you. But I know what
I
did wrong already.
Yeah.
And it just changed the conversation. I felt calm, you know, and obviously I know for everyone, not everyone's going to react the same way. But I think little things like that, just the communication piece, right? Like you've said that several times now, of the communication, the way we speak, the way we talk, it makes a big impact.
And I'll never argue the point. I think that's a terrible question to lead off with when you pull somebody over, right? That's not a good way to start any kind of contact with somebody. I don't know why they would lead off with that question. But I don't want you guys to think we don't get communication training, right? We get it in the academy. We do have tactical communication training that we do bi-yearly. It's once every 2 years we have to do it through POST. And you can go to the POST website and you can actually look and see what training law enforcement has to get. It's all out there. It's a government agency. It's out there for everybody to see. This training that I discussed about was called Verbal Judo. There's actually a book.
Yeah.
The guy who wrote the book came in. It was more of an advanced communication training. And,
That should be mandatory.
It's a different technique, right? It's a different way to talk to people. For someone who does traffic enforcement all day, I think it is very valuable, you know.
Yeah.
In other scenarios, who knows, right? But I think it...
And I think in all scenarios, because I shared too that my role in school right now as a vice principal is very similar in that a lot of times when I'm engaging students is because something went wrong. You know, something's going on, they need support. And something that I learned recently, and I saw a difference in my practice and the way I engage individuals just in general now, was because when I was put in a situation where I was forced to think about, if I'm already having a bad day and someone asked me, why did you do that? It's not going to make me think anything different. Right. I'm probably going to be even more upset because now you're wasting my time with that stupid question. You already know what I did. Why are we talking about this? Right. And they said, what if instead you ask them just how they're doing? Talk to them about something else, you know, throw them off a little bit so that when you get to the thing that you really need to address, they're open and willing and you've built a little bit of trust. And that always takes me back to that traffic stop. Because by the time the officer brought up me speeding, and in fact, I didn't get a ticket. I said I got a ticket, but I didn't get a ticket that day. You know, the guy like talked to me, he asked me a few questions, where you going, where you coming from. After, I imagine like verbal judo, like he knew he had me off balance. He's about to take me down, you know, and he knew that. And he like, let me know, hey, you have your family with you. Please be safe. I want you to get home safe. You promise not to speed. Boom, we were on our way. You know, and I think it is so important in any situation. And I think especially in the ones that are most intense and heightened, where the person that the police officer is trying to talk to is already at a heightened state, you know. And I think one point that is crucial too is we're all human beings, whether you got a badge and a gun or you're on the other side of it. We're all human beings. And I think the more training we have, the better, right? And the more prepared you can be to like, boom, I know what phrase to use, or I know how I can, you know, put myself out there. And I don't know, I'm just thinking a lot about that, because I think it starts with that.
Yeah, training's tough, man, because training costs money.
Yeah.
And when you send cops to training, there's no one out patrolling. And so you have to kind of stagger when people go. Training's great. I got cops who spend their entire career in training and never go out in the street, right? I mean, no one complains about training, because it's almost like a break from reality for a little bit, right? We do training at Chula Vista PD. We do training 5 times a year, 10 hours a day, 50 hours. In addition to that, what Post had to do, because we do have a problem in California, we can't hire enough cops. Chula Vista, the lowest staff police department in the county of San Diego, right? They've put a lot of training online. So I'll give you the example of that tactical communication training. It's online. You do it once every 2 years and it's online. You go through, you read scenarios, you pick the best choice. You know, it's really well done. I mean, it's really good stuff. But a lot of the training that we do, a lot of it has to be done online, because there's not a lot of time, right? We have an 80-hour work week, and the way the schedule is set is that's how we keep everybody out in the community, out patrolling. That's how we keep our detectives at their desk, looking into crimes, following up with victims. And when you go to training, I'm saying training is a great thing. Like I said, we love it. We enjoy it. We don't get enough of it. I'll agree with you 110%. I don't think you'd ever talk to a cop who says we get plenty of training, and that we're happy with all that we get. I think we're, you know, they give us a lot of equipment. We're all expected to be ninjas, you know, like a Steve. Mm-hmm. Steve's a jiu-jitsu expert here.
I would never even say that. I don't even know how to spell jiu-jitsu.
Right. But, you know, we could use a lot more training. It's mandated by the state. It's not a lot of money. It's not a Chula Vista decision. It's not a city of whatever decision. It comes from the state. Right.
See, and I think those are things that are important for us to know.
Yeah.
You know, because there's just too many questions, you know, but to hear the reality that.
And it's unfortunate that it comes down to money.
Yeah.
You know, the safety of the community, the safety of a police officer, it all comes down to money. The training that they would be getting, the time that they would be investing into these trainings that would ultimately lead to a safer interaction between A and B, all comes down to money. Which A and B doesn't even have access to. It comes straight from the top. So, yeah, these kinds of answers that you're providing to the questions are obviously going to give clarity and help us all.
And also action items, because as I'm hearing that, to me, the questions are now then, how do we create time for you all to be able to receive that training? How do we get more funding for that? You know, and I think right now there's a lot of campaigns for defunding police entirely. You know, so I think, again, thinking outside of the box and thinking of the long game, because to me, these situations are not going to change next week. They're not going to change in a month. You know, it might be by the time my son is my age that things are fully different, you know, a generation or two from now. And I think those are the things that, as we understand them better, how can we better support the law enforcement agents that are out there doing what they need to do the best they can, right? And that's one thing we've been talking about, like, do your best. But sometimes our best is not good enough when we don't have the adequate training. And I think times are changing, right? So I would hope that, similar to what's happening in education, our teacher training programs are shifting you know, because for too long and up until recently, teachers were still being trained the same way they were being trained in the 50s and 40s, you know, not for the students that we serve today, and not even for the career paths or the reality that our students face. And so suddenly there's a whole kind of turnover and new programs being created to better support and adequately train teachers to engage students where they're at, to embrace the multicultural, multi-experience, multilingual experiences that they're bringing to the classroom and celebrate them as assets and not as deficits. You know, like I know earlier you had shared a little bit of your own personal background, and you know, in our communities, language has always been a big thing. And I have family members who, you know, didn't learn English because of the way that their elders were treated back in the day. And I think there's a lot of things that there's so much trauma to go around, you know, in histories that make us who we are today. And even though we may not have experienced racism or police brutality, like it kind of embedded in our experiences, you know. And I go back to when I was a kid, like I remember I was in, you know, DARE program, and I was a cross guard at my school. And so my relationships with cops were awesome. I remember when, I don't remember her name, but one of the officers would come and play dodgeball with us. Best day of school. Like I clearly remember those days, you know, awesome experiences. But by the time I was a teenager, you know, it was
different story.
Yeah.
Different narrative.
Different language that I dare not say. But you know, that's how it was, and that's a reality too. You know, I don't support that mentality, but I think too many people can only focus on the negative. And like you said, there's a lot of good things happening. And one thing that I've just been thinking a lot about is how do we promote that? How do we document that and share it? How do we show people what CVPD and maybe other police departments here locally are doing to engage community, to work with community, to build community? You know, because I feel like that's the stuff that's happening, or I want to assume and trust that is happening, but no one knows about it.
Yeah. And being how you always mentioned that they're short on staff.
Right.
They're short on time.
Yeah.
They're short on funding. Like, how do you guys take a slice of that pie and allocate it to reaching out to the community and building that relationship? Because like Jiklib was mentioning, I've never had an issue growing up with police officers, but something inside of me will always be like, oh shit, what's going to happen? I just got pulled over. Oh, this officer wants to talk to me. Mm-hmm. Like something within is like some sort of cultural every background time. That just kind of comes to the surface. Like, what did I do? Whatever. It's like when I go to, I don't, but let's just assume I go to a McDonald's here in Chula Vista and I order a Big Mac, you know, and then I go to Los Angeles to McDonald's and I order a Big Mac. It's like I expect the Big Macs to be the exact same thing. I mean, on a much higher level, on a much higher scale, an interaction with the police officer for me should be the exact same thing if I get pulled over on a Monday by Officer A or like on a Thursday by Officer F. You know, I expect those interactions to be the same. I don't want to like have a guessing game going. I was like, oh man, is this officer having a bad day? Who is this guy? He's going to come up to me and talk to me. Nobody wants to deal with a Derek Chauvin. You know, like nobody wants to come across, get pulled over, hands on the steering wheel, waiting, and a Derek Chauvin persona police officer comes to your window and starts talking to you. You know, how do these Derek Chauvins make it through the cracks so long?
Because the man had like 18 things documented.
Yeah, like who turns a blind eye to that? How do four incidents get overlooked and still get pushed through? And not incidents where, like you were mentioning earlier, like, oh, he used rude language, or oh, he stepped on my dandelions in the yard, in the garden. Like, I'm talking about, like, you know, racial profiling ones, inappropriately whatever to a citizen. Like, how does that happen? We spoke about accountability earlier. We spoke about how there's really no protecting each other, the brotherhood of the badge. But somebody's protecting police officers that have these kinds of track sheets or records behind them. Like, is there, I'm ignorant to this, so I'm just going to throw that. Is there a law that protects the secrecy or the privacy of somebody's records when they've been, I guess, brought to the attention of a captain, a chief, the sergeant, the lieutenant, everybody who touches it when something like this goes down?
Sure. I mean, they're the same laws that protect everybody's mm-hmm. personnel records, no matter where you work, right? I mean, you can't, send an email to Target and say, hey, your employer was rude to me. I want to see their personnel records, right? I mean, it's like HR law, right? Okay. I mean, I don't think, I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe there are specific laws that pertain to public employees and police officers, but I don't feel like they're any different than any other employer that you might work for. And I know that for a fact, because when we are trying to track down, somebody who's broken the law, I work in homicide, right? I'm looking for murders, right? I'm going after the worst of the worst. And I figure that they worked for this company. And I ask that company, hey, where did you send their last check to? Because I need to know where they're at. That's personnel. We can't give it to you, right? So, I mean, no matter what employer you go to, and it's not that they don't want to cooperate with the police. It's they're worried about getting in trouble for violating whatever HR laws that no different than our city or a police department who doesn't want to get in trouble for violating an employee's whatever HR law or whatever privacy laws are put in place. And I can understand how that could be frustrating for some people who are out in the community and they're like, hey, right, I'm a taxpayer. This guy, he works for our city, that we should be able to view that stuff. I can understand that sentiment, but I don't think officers should be treated any differently than any other employees at another company who won't get the same information out, right? And Chico, I want to back up really quick with what you said. I took some notes because you threw a lot at me and I don't want to miss anything. I don't want you to get the wrong impression that we don't get any training or we don't get training. I will tell you, we do the standard training and we get additional training. We send our officers to DUI school, which isn't mandatory, but it's a different training. We send our officers to, drug and alcohol recognition school. There are a bunch of schools that we send out there, but we don't send them all. That's because it's a time, it's a money thing.
Right.
And everybody's always fighting for the dollar, right? Like the chief of police gets a budget and she has to figure out, okay, what am I going to budget on staffing, or what am I going to budget on training? We have to set a budget for overtime. We have, right? I mean, the dollars get spread really thin and she only gets so much to work with. Speaking for the city of Chula Vista, you talked about coffee with a cop earlier.
Yeah.
And, I will tell you that we have a community relations department in Chula Vista PD. They set up all the coffee with the cops. We have coffee with a cop all the time. We did before COVID, right? COVID kind of shut us down. Coffee with a cop is great because it's a community engagement. It gets people coming out. They can ask the questions. But there's always a little bit of negativity that comes with Coffee the Cop because people see cops on social media holding a cup of coffee and they want to know why they're not out patrolling, yeah. Right? What are they out doing?
Can't do anything right.
Yeah. I mean, you. I don't want to say you can't lose for winning, but we try. And I will just tell you, I can only speak to the city of Chula Vista because this is where I've spent my career. We are very communicative with the community. We're our department, social media, the city, the mayor, she's always posting. We put a digital bulletin board out on our front, out in front of the police department so we can share information with the community. I think we do way better than a lot of others. I think you have to communicate with people. Everybody, the buzzword is transparency, right? They want everybody wants to know what's going on, and they want us to be transparent. And I think we put out everything that we can. Now, Steve, to your question about how does somebody slip through the cracks with 18 complaints, I have no idea what happened in Minneapolis on how that guy could have that many complaints. I don't know. I don't think I've met anyone in my career who's ever had like 8 complaints and I've been here for 20 years, right? I mean, if you've been doing a job long enough, you'll come across people who are unhappy with what you did. I've seen officers get complaints because they smiled and somebody thought they were being, sarcastic. I've seen officers get complaints because they were grimacing and they were trying to look mean, right? I mean, do you smile? Do you not smile? It depends, right? Everybody's perception is going to be different. I don't know what that guy's complaints were, but as I told you earlier, where there's smoke, there's fire in any profession. That's a tough one. And I will say, that that police department or that police chief or that city that allowed someone to work through, you know, if I would say probably eventually the details of those complaints will come out. And if those complaints were racial type complaints, then there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be held their feet to the fire, right? And I will say we are in an environment now, we've actually been in an environment for several years where you don't have a police chief or a mayor or a city manager who wants to stand up and say, yes, this person did all these bad things, but I allowed him to be a cop. That just ain't happening right now.
No.
And it should never happen, right? But to say cops aren't being held accountable, personally, I don't see it. I could be wrong. It's a perception thing. That's because I see daily as a supervisor, we hold each other accountable every single day.
And I think that's a fair point for us to kind of talk about a little bit too. Is, you know, you and I were saying this before the podcast of we live in a different city. You know, I think our makeup is different, our experiences are different, and we're focusing on an event that happened in a different state, you know, and like you said, who knows why this man was allowed to continue being a police officer, even though he had that kind of record. I don't know either what those complaints are, but, you know, I know like my wife works at Costco, and if you get 3 write-ups, like that's grounds for termination. You know, so I imagine that there's something like that. And I guess that's my question is, how does that work here in San Diego? If someone has some serious complaints against them, at what point do are you told, hey, you know what, you got to turn in your badge?
Oh, yeah. So I can't say for all of San Diego. I'll speak to Chula Vista, though, right?
Yeah.
We actually have we spent some money on a tracking system. And so when a complaint comes in, it gets put into this thing. It's called the blue team, right? It gets put in the blue team. And all the cops who are going to listen to this later are going to roll their eyes when they hear about the blue team. Because you get a blue team. They put commendations in there. But for the most part, it's because, you know, there's probably something negative coming your way. Well, it also tracks, like, the number. And after a certain number of complaints, after a certain number of traffic accidents, right, cops get in a lot of accidents. We spend 10 hours a day in our car for 20 years. You're gonna get some accidents. It's just kind of the statistics. That's how it's going to work out, right? But after a certain number of the different types of complaints, it pops up an alert. And it tells the supervisor who manages that program, we need to look into this, right? So they'll go back and look and go, hey, officer had 2 car accidents last month. Both of them, they were at fault, they weren't at fault, whatever it is. But it's another check and balance to go back and look and say, hey, do we need to send them to advanced driver training? Maybe they have something personal in their life going on that, you know, their head's not in the game. You know, we're human. You know, we lose family members. We go through divorce. We have all those same issues where, you know, people go to work and they're just not themselves. We have those same issues. It's never an excuse. I'm not saying that. It's never an excuse for anybody's activities or, you know, treatment of others. But you might have somebody whose head's not in it and they bump into another patrol car leaving the parking garage, right? You know, those things are explainable. And after a while, though, you want to check in on that person, not only to make sure, hey, do we not have a pattern? Is this a bad smoke that's turned into a bad fire?
Right.
But maybe there's something wrong with them, too, from a caring standpoint. Almost like an employee, human being. An employee assistance standpoint. Right.
Okay. And then along the same lines, I guess now I'm just curious of having that as an example, what happened to George Floyd, and now applying it to here, local stuff. You know, like we had an incident last week that I think in many ways incited the La Mesa protest and all of that, where the video that I saw showed what seems to me like a young police officer who, in my opinion, I'm not a police officer, but a police officer who never had control of a situation and resorted to putting his hands on an individual and pushed them into quote unquote submission. And then from there, it just escalated with the individual also being, you know, disrespectful, saying some words to the officer, which I could tell visibly, like he was getting upset, you know, and I guess those are the moments where I think what kind of training did that officer receive?
Or not.
Or not.
Yeah.
To be able to handle those situations, because I think one thing that I feel like we all acknowledge that law enforcement, being a police officer, is a high stress, high risk profession, you know, like no question. And therefore, I think, and this is why I'm pushing so much on the training, is I feel like because of that, we need to prioritize that. We need to make sure that those individuals out there representing us and protecting us out there to serve and protect have the highest level of training that they can receive, so that when those of us on the other side who are already in high stress and upset and angry and we're saying the meanest thing we can think of, mm-hmm. that as best as you can, as humanly possible, like, you don't react to that. Because like you pointed out, that man in Minneapolis, there was his face says something. When he's looking up and his knees holding George Floyd down, he's saying something.
Yeah.
He's making a statement. And I agree with what was said of, he might have just done it to say F you to everybody. To all of you was watching this. Look at this. I'm doing this. You know, and I think those are the things, like, you know, last week too, is a music artist, Killer Mike, went on and did a news conference. And he said, we got to get ahead of this. You know, we got to get community review boards. We got to get involved. You got to vote, you know. And I think that's what really kind of sparked me to think about, like, what are other things that we could be doing, you know, and being in support of, we can't get rid of the police, you know, but we also can't expect the police to get better if the police ain't getting the support they need, you know, whether it's more recruits, more money to specifically for training, you know, and I think just a better understanding from all of us of what y'all are up against, because it's tough. You know, it's a tough job, and it's not for everybody, obviously. Like, we need more cops in Chula Vista. Like, those are all realities that I think our community, too. Like, let's talk about that.
Yeah, you mentioned that we're at an all-time low in police officers in Chula Vista, lowest in the city or in the state. How? Why? Money? Lack of interest? People just don't want to be police officers anymore? What does it have to do with the current state of situation, mentality of community towards the cops? Like, what is it, all of that?
Yeah, actually it is. You know, I get, again, here in Chula Vista, you know, we went through the big recession. Officers got laid off. We stopped hiring. We froze positions. We never caught up. So, Steve, you guys know, we had Measure A, you know, it seems like it was just yesterday, but 2 years ago now, we passed Measure A in order to get us more officers. And the crazy thing with Measure A, you know, it's going to add 30-something more officers. The way they wrote it, that gets us tied for last place with Carlsbad PD for officers, right? So we had to get a tax measure to get us tied for last place. So it doesn't even get us out of the cellar, right? Then you have the other issue with, who wants to be a cop right now?
Yeah.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. I love my job. I would never trade. I have nothing but good things to say of my profession, the people I work with. We have the best cops here, hands down. I have no issue telling somebody when law enforcement has done something wrong that should never happen. Absolutely not. But it's hard right now. We have a different generation of cops that we're growing up with. We have, you know, I'm kind of, you know, I'm 43 years old. See, I look young, all right?
Yeah, okay. That's young. Good.
Okay.
40 plus so is what we like,
know,
to say.
I've been doing this 20 years. You know, and the officers, there's a kind of a little change, and I'm not saying our officers are any better or worse for it, but, you know, kind of like my generation, we will never leave Chula Vista PD. We love where we're at. We are also the lowest paid police department in the county of San Diego, second to last. I will correct that because the mayor will correct me later, second to last. So there, out of 12 police departments, we're paid number 11. That's salary and benefits. So there are 10 other police agencies that can offer more than what the city of Chula Vista can offer. So not only are we fighting people not wanting to be cops, we're fighting people who want to get paid more. We're fighting our own officers wanting to leave. If they're going to have this tough profession, they want to be, you know, they want to be, you know, valued for it. They want to be paid. They want to be compensated for it. Mm-hmm. Thank you. So it's tough. We're fighting the battle on both ends. We're trying to recruit people. We're trying to retain people. And we don't have enough people to begin with, right? Those aren't reasons for any problems law enforcement having, but that's the reality of what we live in here in the city of Chula Vista, which is why I think we do a phenomenal job with what we have and the officers that come to work every single day. We've come to work every single day. We didn't stay home for COVID. We all came into work every single day. Right now, there's a lot of unrest in our city, in our county. We've been very lucky. I think our community is different than the others, which is why we haven't seen the problems, right? But you look up and down Third Avenue, people are concerned. People are boarding up their businesses because they don't know if stuff could come to Chula Vista. I feel like we're different here in the South Bay, so Chula Vista specifically. I think we work with the community enough. I think we treat our community, you know, with respect, that we're professionals, that I feel like there's a mutual respect there that, you know, people aren't wanting to come and have that kind of, you know, civil unrest here in our city, right? I hope it doesn't come to our city. But our officers have been, I told you this morning, right? I just got up before I came in here. We've all been working, held over. I supervise eight homicide detectives. I normally work from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. every single day. That schedule has been scrapped. We got called in on the weekend and we've been here ever since. So I took a day off because I was scared. I didn't want you to think I was dodging you. So I took a day off. I had to make some phone calls because we're all being called into work. I made some phone calls. I said, I need to go. We need to have this conversation. Yeah. Right? And my fear is that, hey, Steve, emergency schedule. I can't leave work.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
And then that's what would have been.
I would have been okay. We probably would have been all right with it. Right? But I'm happy you came.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I mean, to be fair and honest, I think I appreciate hearing everything that you're saying, because the reality is that we have a very negative perspective or perception of what law enforcement is and who they really are. And I think having this opportunity to sit with you reinforces my belief that we need to communicate more, that we need to collaborate more, and that I need to do more. And I'm saying this for myself, like I want to do more to help bridge that gap, you know, and showcase the good work that is happening. Because again, like in my community, I've seen the fruit of that collaboration and I know it's possible. And I think we need to highlight that. But if you hadn't come today,
ooh,
I might not have felt the same way. Mm-hmm. You know, like just being honest.
And it was important.
I get it. Yeah. I get it.
And it was important that you came in. Because now that I've linked up with Chicle and we've become like the more prevalent, we've risen to the top in this podcast scheme that we have here. Like it's him and I together now. I wanted you to meet Chicle, you know, because I know what kind of a police officer you are, you know, and it would be amazing if more police officers were like you, you know, eager and available to communicate with, not really like standoffish or pushing people back. On the contrary, you're very welcoming. Like whatever you have a question, let me know. That is what I want for my children's generation to deal with or view a police officer as, you know, because unfortunately, like Chicle said, for us, we have negative visuals, not all experiences, but experiences through media, experiences through just like perception on what a local law enforcement officer is, you know. And until you actually talk, and if I didn't know you, I would still have that mentality, because I don't have enough interactions with any police officers that would sway me in either direction for negative or for positive. But since I do know you, all I know is you, and I was like, you know what, this is going to be perfect. I've been trying to get you in here, David, for a while. It's unfortunate that it's at this time, but there is no better time to even make it happen than now. Even though I got pushback from family and from friends, like they're like, what the fuck? Yeah. What are you doing? Like don't do that. They're not us. You know, like they're not us. He's not one of us. He doesn't represent us. He is against us. Like that. I'm not gonna lie to you. I got maybe like a nice 8 to 10 messages like that saying, you're fucking up, bro. Like, don't do that. Mm-hmm. I don't know why you're putting yourself out there. You're going to look like a quote unquote bootlicker. And I'm like,
I've actually never heard that phrase before until like a few months ago.
I just heard it this year. Well, I've heard it maybe like latter part of last year. I mean, it's been a lot of shit going on.
I've been seeing it more.
Yeah,
and more
there's been a lot of shit lately. Going on. Yeah. So, and I'm like, you know what? No. I mean, I have a business in this community. I deal with a lot of city government officials. You know, we know the mayor. She comes here. We know the fire captain, the chief battalion. You know, I've never met our police chief. You know, I've seen her conduct video interviews through video or just like here, like speeches that she does. She seems like a very top-notch person. But for me, police is you. And if there was no you, police would be Derek Chauvin. Mm-hmm. You know, all of the other police officers involved in all of the negative like acts being committed nationwide, worldwide on a daily basis. So my saving grace is that I know you. And so if I could bring someone like you to tell more people like what you see or what you do or what you are guys are actively doing, because, you know, you are in that boss role. You are not like an entry level guy. You have decades under your belt and what you do, decades behind the badge.
Influence.
That's influence, man. So, I mean, thank you for coming in.
I appreciate, you know, the opportunity to be here. I felt bad for you. I knew you were going to take some heat. I saw it coming, but I'll tell you.
But you didn't say
wait,
nothing.
Did you get any heat? You're going out with the community. So, dare you?
That's what I was just going to say, right? Like, people were like, hey, you know, you're going to do a pot. What are they going to ask you? And I said, you know what? I don't know. I don't care. Right?
Like, nice.
It doesn't matter, right? I know, Steve, you said there's going to be a lot of tough questions. I'm like, what's a tough question, mm-hmm. right? Do I think something's wrong?
You want some tough questions?
Wrong, I mean, right? Do you think, right? I mean, no, but to your point, right? Yeah. It's like people were like, oh, hey, you know, and it's a little out of our comfort zone. But I would just say, if we don't have the conversation, if we don't communicate, even if we don't agree, you can't change perception. You can't change, you know, what. You can't change people's feelings, right? I can never tell somebody how to feel. I can never go through somebody's experiences that they had, their negative experiences, and tell them that that was just a misperception, right? You saw that the wrong way, but this is how I can never tell. All I can do is give them a new perception, show them what I'm about, show them what I think and hope all of our Chula Vista cops are about. So it changes their perception, at least for us. I'll never change the perception of Minneapolis PD. I would never try to change that. I've never been to Minneapolis. I've never met a Minneapolis cop. I don't know what their training is. I don't know, you know, what their policies are. I can speak to here in Chula Vista, and I could just tell you we do right by the community. Our chief wants us to come out. Chief, I know you're going to be listening to this. I gave her a heads up. I want to be transparent, right? That's the word. And let everybody know, hey, I want to come and do this, right? And I wasn't sure if you were doing this live or not. I know you were not. You're going to.
Yeah, we thought about it, later. But we ultimately decided, you know, we're going to unlock that level of live feed a little further down the road.
Because I thought, well, you know, I'll tell people, give a heads up so they can listen in. But I wasn't sure if it was going to be live. And I thought, well, maybe I should wait to see how it goes first.
Yeah, we don't edit this, man. We just push it through.
For better or for worse, get cleaned up.
None.
You guys are pros, man. This is
great. Okay. But thank you. Because I was going to mention in regards to the accountability, something just came to me when you were saying right now is that you're not going to change the views of Minneapolis citizens. You know, how does that make you feel as a police officer, as somebody in local law enforcement? Where a bad, quote-unquote, bad apple fucks it up for everybody. Forever going to be digging yourself out of that hole that other officers have put you guys in. Like, that must be... That's a tough situation to be in.
It's terrible. That fucking asshole, mm-hmm. right? Mary dropped some F-bombs when she was on, so I figure I'm okay, right?
You get one. You get one.
Okay, I'm done, right? But that dude has made every single cop in America's job that much harder, right?
And unsafer.
I despise him for what he did, for what he stood for what he showed America. And you know, I got to tell you the most mind-boggling thing of the whole thing. He's not in a dark alley somewhere where he thinks no one's watching him. He's got 20 cameras pointed at him and he will not get off George Floyd. That's the most amazing thing to me, right? Like when we got the body-worn cameras, big deal, right? Public wants body-worn cameras. Cops are a little skeptical. The body-worn cameras have been the best thing that's ever happened to us. I got to tell you.
Because it works both ways.
As a supervisor, let me tell you, I just had to look at the body-worn camera, and I know. It's the best thing ever. Our cops love them. I don't go out in the field. I'm not wearing one right now.
Do they malfunction a lot?
Not a lot.
Because every time I hear of something happening, it's like, oh, the body camera wasn't on or it wasn't working appropriately.
Well, I'll tell you what. We spend a lot of money on those cameras. So when something's not functioning, when we're terrified, oh, my God, somebody's going to accuse us of turning. We hold the feet to the fire for those manufacturers because we spend a ton of money on those things. It's an electronic device. It's going to malfunction. I can tell you unequivocally, both of you right now and everyone listening, if there is ever a time where an officer turns off a camera on purpose so that somebody does not see what's bad, they will get fired. Without a doubt, it will do not pass go. Do not collect $200 just like that. That is absolutely not allowed. Do they malfunction? Sure. Any piece of electronic device will malfunction on you. But if that were to ever happen, absolutely not. Big no-no.
Nice.
And the great thing is every officer who's there has a camera, right? So if one officer's camera does malfunction, you pray and hope that there's three others whose camera is on and working the way it should, right? But we do hold those companies to their feet to the fire when stuff's not working, right?
Is that? I'll save the best question.
I was going to say.
Oh, here we go.
Well, that example that we saw, and I've seen several images since then of an officer with their knee on the back of somebody, not just the neck, but anywhere. Is that like a standard move for everybody? Like, are you trained to hold people down like that, or at what point?
So you know, it kind of. A lot of the stuff that we do, a lot of it is like related to like jujitsu, right? And you have the shoulder pin, right? Where you get somebody's shoulder down. When you're in a fight with somebody, and it's no different, people are going to end up all over the place, right? But when you get somebody handcuffed and you get them detained and the fight is over, you get off.
Right.
Plain and simple. You put them on their side. It's called the recovery position. And you sit them up and you check all the bad guys for injuries. You check the officers for injuries. You make sure everybody's okay, right? When people, in a perfect world, I'd open up the back door to a patrol car and people would get right in, right? Yeah, right. My bad. I screwed up. I broke the law. Let's go to jail, right?
Yeah.
That's not the world we live in, right? And people turn and they fight with the police. We have rules, right? We're allowed to use force to affect, but we have rules that we have to play by. Bad guys don't have rules. Right. But our rules say you're not to punish, you're to an effect and arrest. So as far as like putting a knee in somebody's back, I won't say we're trained to do that.
Right.
When you're in a fight and somebody's on the ground, I'm not a very big guy. It would take all of my body weight to hold down a big guy. If I ended up in that position, that's the position we're going to be in if I'm in a fight with somebody. But as soon as they are handcuffed, and everyone is saying, we're going to get right off that person. And it happens all the time. It's a beautiful thing when I'm watching video. I'm a supervisor. I have to watch video all the time. We actually have a person in our department whose only job is to review use of force videos. Every single, and I should have said this earlier, every single use of force that Chula Vista PD does is watched later on body camera by a supervisor. Every single one. And if they have an issue with it, they go to the officer supervisor and go, hey, you need to watch this video. There's checks on our checks. And I tell you, we do it the right way. I can't speak to Minneapolis, right? But I could tell you, we are not trained to hurt people. We're trained to get people into custody and as safe as possible for everybody. I hope that answered your question.
Yeah.
Okay.
El chicle.
And then there was three people just standing there. Would that happen here in our city? Where someone abuses their power and then others just
play lookout,
stand by. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it shouldn't. You know, I could tell you that. I mean, I can't say it won't. I could tell you we'd have four less police officers or three less police officers here if it did. We are trained. We are, it's in our policy. It's in the law, right? That you have to intervene. I'm a victim advocate. That's who I'm a homicide sergeant, right? I don't care who you are. If you are the victim of a crime, I want to get you justice. Whether you're the victim of violent crime, which is what I deal with on a daily basis, whether you're the victim of a property crime, when somebody breaks into your place here, I want to get you justice. How do we get you justice? We put somebody in jail. We hold them accountable for what they did, right? But I talked about before, we're not into punishment. That's not what we do. That's not what we decide. But I'm a victim advocate. George Floyd is a victim. He went from being a suspect. I'm assuming they had a reason to arrest him. I don't know. I don't know enough about it. But he went from being a suspect to being a victim as soon as that officer showed his bad heart and he had bad intentions. I think he did. I mean, I don't know him. I saw the same video both you guys do.
8 minutes.
That's
ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's bad. It's despicable. Any word you want to throw at it, I will agree with you.
Yeah.
It shouldn't happen. He's going to be held accountable.
Yeah.
I'm a believer in the system.
I hope so.
Yeah, we hope so. Because guess what? This is just the appetizer of what could potentially happen if he's not held accountable.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, 100%. That's tough. And so, no. Though any officers that are standing by, they become equally liable.
Yeah.
Things get heated. You're in a fight with somebody. Officers know that. We're trained to recognize that. Hey, come here, back off, right? Go take a walk, right? You're good. Mm. He's cuffed. I'll take it from here, right? A lot of times the arresting officer isn't the transporting officer.
Yeah.
You should recognize that, right? It's like I said, we're human. We're not robots. Take a breath, right? Go get a drink of water. You have to go interview that person later. You just arrest them. You got to go interview them.
Yeah.
If you treated them unfairly, they ain't going to want to talk to you.
Hell no.
So it's not good for your investigation, right? So you treat people the way people want to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
Because I tell you, law enforcement gets in fights with people all the time. And then by the time they get to the jail, they're good. And they talk. And they go, yeah, I made a mistake.
Yeah.
Sorry I fought with you. And the officer says, you know what? Me too.
Right.
We both had a... I'm sorry we had to meet like this, right?
Yeah.
I appreciate you owning up to what you did. And, I wish you the best of luck, right?
Yeah.
Those are the best contacts, right? I mean, I tell training, I was a training officer for a long time. When somebody thanks you after you've given them a ticket on a traffic stop, you did a great job.
Right.
Honestly, when somebody says, thank you, officer, when you just handed them a ticket,
yeah,
you are good at your job. Right. And you made them feel comfortable. Right. I mean,
yeah. You could take that thank you in many different ways, though.
Well,
you know what I mean? It's
thank you for not hurting me.
Yeah.
I'll take it any way and get it. Soon, I'll tell you.
OK. Last question.
OK.
Given like all this stuff that happened, did the CVPD send out a message to our local officers like, things to be aware of, here's what we're doing, here's how we want to respond moving forward, like any kind of action items to help us be better, help the police department represent themselves in a more positive light?
Dude, that's a great question. And I will tell you that immediately following that incident coming out on the news, that video coming out, mm-hmm. that we got an email from our use of force instructor. Reminding us what our policy is.
Nice.
You do not put knees into people's necks. That is not in our policy. That is not trained. That is not okay, right?
Awesome.
The chief sent out a message. Please communicate with the community. You're going to get asked a lot of questions like I am today. What is going on here? Talk to them. Don't shy away from it. Answer the question. Tell them how you feel, right? I tell you, we do it right. We want to make sure our cops, I want every single one of our cops to communicate with the community, to answer those. I can tell you, there's no tough question, right? I mean, it is what it is. That guy, he murdered George Floyd. I am a believer in the system. He's going to be held accountable for it. He's going to spend the rest of his life in prison, get the death penalty. I don't know what Minneapolis does. I don't know what the laws are that pertain to those officers who stood around and allowed that to happen, right? I hope they are equally prosecuted. I hope they're equally held accountable. Because I believe in the system. If I didn't believe in the system, I wouldn't be doing my job. I wouldn't be very good at my job, right?
All right. You just made me think of one more. Because you just said how you were encouraged to answer the questions and
sure.
tell people how you feel about it. I guess that's what we want more of, right? And I understand the policy of you don't talk about personnel issues, meaning I would never talk about, like, if I know Steve is going through something, I wouldn't say his name and talk about it. But I think when we have these moments of extreme violence where a person loses their life unnecessarily, the fact that at least just like how we saw so many videos, like I haven't seen one video of someone in Minneapolis speaking up about it, you know, and I think that, I guess that's my question is what is the difference between speaking up about that and you being encouraged to do so versus any other time that this has ever happened? And maybe times are different where we have more social media, more videos being posted. Like everyone has a camera that can go live in a snap
quickly,
yeah. You know? So I think maybe times are different, but I don't know. Like, what do you think?
Yeah. No, so for me, I think it was, you know, we don't need permission to share our opinions or talk to the media. I think it was a chief saying, hey, don't shy away from it. Embrace it. If nice. The community wants to talk about it, let's engage them. Let's discuss it. I think that's all that was. I think it was her just saying, hey, let's have those tough conversations, right?
Good.
Yeah, because this is not the time to stand around with your arms crossed and avoiding those conversations, 100%. Avoiding those questions. You know, and perception like I said, is reality.
Our chief, she's very personable. She gets very emotional. She's a people person, man. I got to tell you, she wants us just how you guys want everyone in the community to be treated. That's how our police chief wants everybody. That's how our mayor wants everybody to be treated. Right. And so, I think that was her just encouraging people.
Nice.
You know, don't hesitate. Don't feel like you shouldn't or you can't.
Right.
Let's have those conversations. We will never change perceptions without discussing them.
Exactly. And that's a great point, man, because I feel like that's exactly it. It's not that you never could. It's that maybe in the moment you feel like you can't or you shouldn't because that's another police officer. But just to have your own leadership reach out and say, hey, do it. It's okay. It's empowering, you know, and I appreciate that.
We need more of that.
That type of leadership. Yep. Yeah. That is pushing for progress. Like that's what we all want. We want progress. And, you know, like Killer Mike said, we are not perfect, but we're better than we've ever been. And how do we keep moving forward? So I really appreciate your time and everything you've shared with us. I feel a lot better. But I also feel like there's so much work to do.
This is the good entry level conversation to have. Mm-hmm. And we're happy that we can have you down here and be a part of it. You know, I'm hoping, like I said earlier, this shines a little bit of light of positivity on how, at least here in Chula Vista, in the South Bay, in our communities, you guys are doing your part to alleviate certain concerns.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I didn't want to shy away from it. I wanted to make sure I could come in and have this conversation. It's I hope you don't get beat up too bad about it. But I would just tell you, you know, I've been doing this 20 years, so you know. My wife's family, when I meet new friends, I go through this every time I meet somebody new, right? Because of those perceptions, right? Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's human nature and I get it. And I think I'm just used to it right now. And like I said, it's just, it's a terrible thing when we have to have these conversations because of a George Floyd incident, right? A tragedy like that. I wish we could have these conversations just because we want to, not because we need to. I think right now we need to. And so I'm glad we finally got together. We've been trying to do it for a long time, so I appreciate you bringing me in.
I'm glad you took that edible before the episode too. It really calmed you down.
No, he did it.
But thanks, man. Thank you very much, Chicle. You have anything else to add?
No, that's it, man. Appreciate you, Mr. Hoyos, Officer Hoyos, David.
David. Yeah, how do we approach you? David.
David. Yeah.
David Hoyos.
That's my name, brother.
Appreciate you, man, and thank you for everything you do for our community too.
No, I love this community. I didn't grow up here, but
you patrol it, man.
I spent more than half my life here now, and so I'm real proud of it, and I care about everybody here.
I have a lot of other questions that I had for the previous interview before this happened, so we'll probably have you back at a different time and ask you more things, conceal, carry, you know, what the stats are currently in Chula Vista. I was really curious about, like, you know, how COVID has affected certain statistics, domestic violence, homicide, mental health. I wanted to kind of delve into that, but this is not the right platform or time to kind of dive into that. What we needed to do is do exactly what we did. Chicle, thank you very much. You bring it, like always. David, you're always welcome here to share your thoughts. Hopefully, we don't have to have another kind of these interviews in the future where we're discussing something else on the same lines. But thank you very much, man.
I appreciate it.
We'll put this bad boy out probably within the next couple of days. We have to. Mm-hmm.